Lawrence Taylor and I, we were matched on a Monday night football game. The coach called a play where I had to go back and crack back on Lawrence. Oh. So the first time he called it, I go in. Lawrence didn't see me. I hit him here. I knock him down on the ground.
Shit,
oh, my gosh.
Willie.
He gets up cursing me out. He's like, you little mother...
Oh, man. So this is an awesome episode of Hot Boxing with Evan Britton, man. And we got the one and only Evan. Put it down on us, Evan. Introduce him, Evan.
The one and only Super Bowl champ, fastest man in NFL history,
man.
Willie Gault.
What's up? What's up?
The fastest man in NFL history, Willie?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm sure
at least
he
won.
Really? I mean, arguably, but, you know, one of them, right?
Hell yeah.
Top two or three.
So tell me that. What speed do you have to accomplish to establish that?
Okay, so this is it, guys. There is TV speed, and then there's real speed.
I want to know the real speed.
Oh, real speed, okay. So when you go talk about real speed, speed is measured by the 100 meters in any Olympics. So if you talk about people who played in the National Football League who ran great 100-meter times, you talk about Bob Hayes, of course, who was a world record holder, 9.95.
Jump, too.
Absolutely. And, Woo. You know, the guy now who's in the league who plays at Kansas City, he's run 9.9. He's good. Cheetah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's Tyreek Hill, yeah. He's good.
When
you talk about real speed, you got Sam Grady, you got myself. You got Ron Brown. You got James Jett. Skeets Nehemiah was...
He was hurdles.
He was hurdle, but he was fast, but yeah. He wasn't... He was probably 10 flat, 10-1, okay. Which is okay. Amazing.
Yeah.
What about the Rocket?
Rocket was
and
quick.
What about his brother?
Which one?
His brother was quick, too.
But Rocket was quicker.
Yeah.
But if you talk about top 10, I'm not sure Rocket makes the top 10.
Okay, I can dig it.
Dale Green makes the top 10. Dale ran 10, I think 10, 12, 10, 18. But when you talk about real speed, it's different. I mean, newscasters say, oh, my gosh, he's fast just because he caught someone who was much slower. So it makes someone appear to be fast. But real speed is something that is God-given.
Real speed, to me, is two guys who claim they're the best in the world and they're going
exactly.
At it.
See, yeah. And that's what it is. That's a Usain Bolt. Yeah. Because people say, oh, Usain Bolt, people can beat Usain Bolt in football. I go, you have no idea. It's not even close. First of all, in track, you go off a gun, so your reaction time is a little bit different. In football, it's off your reaction time, so your time will be quicker. So you actually gain.
Who was that last guy that beat Usain Bolt? What's his name again?
You're talking about Justin Gatlin?
With the Gatlin.
Yeah. But, you know, it was his twilight years. I mean, it's like when he was at his top, when he ran 9.59, no one was close.
Wow.
I mean, Tyson Gay was the closest, and he ran 9.6. So, but Usain Bolt is a different
that's
because
like,
he's so
like
tall.
That's like incredible speed.
Oh
right?
Yeah.
That's like unheard of speed.
It's unheard
for
of
human beings.
Well,
right?
Especially Mike because he's so tall.
He's
6'5", 6'6", right?
Yeah.
And think about it: a guy 6'6" is in front of a guy who's 5'8" at 30 meters.
Yeah,
that's not supposed to work that way.
But you know, he's an anomaly. He's really fast and he's great talent. And a great guy, happy guy, you know?
Yeah, he's
enjoys
awesome,
life,
man.
For sure.
He'd
but that's
be a
real
good
sport.
Guest on the pod.
Oh, he'd be a great guest. Jamaica, man.
That must have been incredible because he had a lot of pressure on him back then.
Of course. But
the
he was so confident.
With the guy, yeah, Tyson was asking about the other guy.
Tyson Gay.
Yeah, the other guy.
Justin Gatlin.
Gatlin was
tough,
though.
Absolutely. And also his countryman. What's his name? Asafa Powell.
Fuck.
Yeah, Asafa Powell ran 9.72. And then Johan Blake. Johan Blake was 9.6. See, those guys are in different stratosphere. There's 9.6. There's like four or five guys, six guys maybe, seven guys. And then there's 9.9, 9.8, and then there's 10 and above. So
tell me, what do you think, how do you recover from that? After the race is over, how do your body feel from this?
Well, see, this is the thing. People don't see all the hard work. I mean, when you go out and box, Mike, people just see the results. Like,
you go out and knock.
It's the same thing.
Right.
I mean, you got 3 months or 4 months of training.
And during that process, you're getting your ass kicked.
Exactly. Absolutely. Same thing in track.
Yeah,
I mean, think about it.
You ain't looking pretty.
In track, we start in November. We start November 1st to run in June. So in November, December, January, February, March, we're kicking butt. We're on the beach. We're at the park. We're running hills. We're doing weights. We're pushing. I mean, everything. So what happens is when you run 100 meters, you run further in practice. You run 300, 400, 500 to get ready to run a 100. So when you run 100, you can recover faster because you've already done it. So it's a lot of training. I mean, a lot of training goes into that. People don't realize. They just see the end result.
Yeah.
So as a real athlete, you know, we all know. We've been there. It's not what you see on Sunday or what you see on the Saturday night when the boxing. It's all the stuff before.
You have those guys
Monday through Friday.
You know, Evan, I'm sure you have them in football too. We have them, those guys that get in the gym and could beat everybody, that kick the champ, kick everybody, and then you put them in front of a screen, put them in front of some people, put some lights on, put some popcorn. They fucking fail.
Yeah. They're called practice. They're practice pros.
Right? Yeah, exactly. What kind of people are those? You get those guys. Right? Oh, you guys probably running like hell, but you're on the track. Yeah. Can't bust.
We have a guy one right now who is he says he's from. Trinidad, but we have no idea where he's from. And he claims he's run 10-4 before in 100 meters, but at practice, I mean, he just practices, never runs. So I think he's afraid to run, really, because he doesn't really want to expose himself before it's what he runs. I want to run. I want to run against the best.
Yeah,
exactly. I want to run against the best to push myself. So,
hell yeah.
But yeah,
dude.
Absolutely. Called practice players.
I'd be so pissed off, especially being an offensive lineman. And going against the DNs every day.
Right.
And, like, dude will throw some nasty pass rush move on
Absolutely.
Me, right, in
For
practice.
Sure.
Beat the hell out of me. And then we get into the games. I'm watching him. He's just getting ragdolled by exactly. this guy on the other team.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I'm like, that dude sucks.
Right.
That's the same thing I say in the fight. The same thing. Whip my ass in the gym. I saw him with this bum knocking him down,
right, exactly.
beating him up. I'm like, what the fuck?
Right,
what are
exactly.
you doing?
I know. Because the nerve. I mean, I think it's the nerve, the pressure. Of competing because competing is different than
the
practice.
Pressure. That's what makes that's what makes the champions
Absolutely.
The difference from the great fighters.
Right.
You know?
When you practice, you're practicing. When it's for real, it's for real.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a different animal. We all know that because we've been there. So absolutely.
It's interesting, man.
It's very
interesting. In the competition, that's when all of that training just happens because you're not thinking in a game.
You're not thinking a game. You just it's reacting.
It's just
what
all
did you
reactions.
Think about Carl Lewis in his day?
Carl Lewis.
He's
okay, I'll tell you about Carl
too.
Carl Lewis is great. Carl Lewis and I actually made the first junior Olympic team together.
Uh-huh.
And then we made the first Olympic team together. We broke the world's record together in a 4x100-meter relay. Carl ran anchor. I ran second and in Helsinki in 1983. It was the first time any team ever had gone under 38 seconds. We ran 37.86. I ran second. Carl ran anchor. Emmett King from Alabama ran first. Calvin Smith ran third. And it was amazing in Helsinki. But Carl was a guy, of course. Carl was the Usain Bolt of his time.
Mm.
I mean, he was undefeated in 100, 200, long jump. He had, you know, records and he was just an amazing athlete, really, really amazing athlete. Yeah,
and he worked out pretty good too.
Oh yeah, Carl worked out, trained a lot because he long jumped and he ran 100 and 200, so you had to. I mean, in track and field, you can't hide because it's you against the clock. If you don't do the work, then the time is not going to show. So Carl had to work hard, and I've been around some amazing guys like Walter Payton, of course, in Chicago. Walter Payton is I met Walter before I was drafted by the Bears, and so we had become friends. And so when I got there to have that friendship with him and see the way he trained and the way he worked, it was amazing. This guy was so strong.
Did you ever train with him?
Animal. Oh, yeah.
He told me one day. He told me. He said, Mike, me and you have to work out.
Exactly.
We got to get you back in
shape. Yeah, man. Mike,
did he say
crazy.
That to you?
Yeah.
He was amazing.
That's amazing, dude.
Walter was one of he was a practical joker. He would do anything. You wouldn't know what was happening. All of a sudden, a bomb or a firecracker would go off at your feet or something like that.
Shit.
He was really crazy.
Yeah, fuck with you.
Oh, yeah, he would. But he was so strong. His forearm was like this wood here.
He was an animal.
So he hit someone like that.
Incredible. Oh, yeah. Always in shape.
Always in shape.
You remember that heel you also
did? Oh, yeah.
It's always
the heel.
That brought up the
heel.
Animal. Fucking animal.
Yeah, we do heels up sand, too, which is, oh, my gosh, Mike, it kills you.
You ever played against Lawrence Taylor?
I got a great Lawrence Taylor story.
I know you got to have a story with that guy.
Okay. Okay, Lawrence Taylor and I, they won the Super Bowl the year after we won it. So we were matched on a Monday night football game, the first game of the year, of the two Super Bowl champions. So I played a flanker. So I was on the left side, and Lawrence landed on the left side of his defense. So the coach called a play where I had to go back and crack back on Lawrence.
Oh, fuck.
So I was probably from here to the wall to Lawrence, which is about 20 feet. So the first time he called it, I go in. Lawrence didn't see me. I hit him here. I knock him down.
Oh,
ground.
Shit.
Oh, my gosh.
Willie.
He gets up cursing me out. He's like, you little motherfucker. I'm going to kill you. and then he goes over to the coach. He goes over to the coach Dick and starts cursing Coach Dick out. If you ever call that play again, I'll fuck you up. Coach.
I remember seeing
exactly.
this.
Exactly. And
I've
then, so Mike, the coach called the very same play the very next time. Okay, so I line up again. Lawrence look at me and go, oh, you going to do the same thing? I go, oh, shoot, I hope I'm
going.
So as soon as the ball snapped, I go towards Lawrence. He turns around, just like that in my head. I went, oh,
fuck.
Knocked me out. I told you I was going to get you. I told you, little man.
Dude, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
That was so
that.
Funny. And Lawrence and I talked about that about 3 or 4 months ago. We laughed about it. It was really funny.
Mike, that's the worst thing.
Listen, I saw this thing to the life and times of LT. This guy was in.
Right.
This guy's not human.
He was great.
Well, you guys are very similar, man.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
God,
Mike, you weren't human either, Mike. Believe me.
Yeah.
You were amazing, Mike. I mean, just. You beat guys before they go in the ring, really.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
They were intimidation. And Lawrence was like that. I mean, offensive
you see,
tackle.
Trying to intimidate you, I'm gonna kill you, little.
Of course. Oh yeah,
dude. Lawrence Taylor.
If you
is
ever
the
do
reason.
That again, I'm gonna kill you. Dude, I gotta do what I gotta do. But you know,
God.
It was not pretty though.
Man, first time I he's on the field talking shit. That's
general.
I'm kill you.
Oh yeah,
no.
Always.
LT, man.
Always for sure. It was crazy. The first time I got him though, I knocked him down. Man, he was not happy. But that was my badge. Like, cause I don't do that. I mean, I'm a little guy. I was small.
That's one of the nastiest plays, man, in the NFL is those crackback plays.
And you got to hit him high. You can't hit him low.
So I
hit him like right here in the shoulders in this area, which was really hard, but he didn't see it off balance because he was looking this way.
Yeah.
Bam!
Oh, yeah.
Man, he got up, Mike. I almost ran to the locker room. I was like, man, you... But we joke about it now.
I got to tell you guys a story. It's the worst bit of hazing that I ever experienced or saw. It was secondhand. But when we were on the Bears.
Right.
It was training camp. Oof. And we'd go to...
in Plattsville.
Yeah,
exactly.
And one morning, our rookie O-lineman, Kyle Long, he's late. And like we're all ready to go out to practice, padded up, taped up. You know, it takes a fucking hour to get ready for football practice.
Right.
We're all ready to go, about to get on the field, and Kyle comes pulling up in a golf cart with some assistant, and he's like, he looks exhausted. We're like, dude, did you go out fucking partying all night? And he's like, dude, I had to sleep in my car. And we're like, what the fuck? Why did you do that? And he said, well, last night when we went back to our rooms, I got in my bed, and I'm just sitting there looking at my playbook, and all of a sudden I see this movement on my blanket. There was a tarantula in my bed. One of the vets had gone and put a fucking tarantula in the dude's bed.
Oh my gosh.
Before he got back to his room.
Why would he do that?
Because that's what they do.
That's what they do. That's crazy.
I didn't sleep the next night because I was like, motherfucker, that thing's probably running around here now.
Probably. Absolutely. That's crazy. Oh, training camp stories are crazy. Did they make you sing your alma mater?
Oh, yeah. I had to do
that. Okay, so they do that. So, Mike, when a rookie comes into the league, they usually make them sing the alma mater in front of the whole team. So they always mess with rookies. They make them pay for stuff. They make them do, I mean, everything. It was crazy. I mean, that's the way it goes with rookies. I mean, I have some stories with the Bears. Were crazy.
Tell me about
McMahon.
Barry Sanders.
Oh, my gosh. Barry Sanders.
Did he fake your team out?
Oh, my God.
The guy, the tackle.
Oh, of course. I used to sit there and watch Barry on our defense while he was there. The defense was there. And Barry was crazy. He was crazy. His moves, because he's so low to the ground. I mean, he make moves and guys go here and he's over there. It was just incredible.
Yeah, Barry's unbelievable.
I mean, if he didn't retire, he'd probably have 20,000 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, he was amazing. Amazing. Just a great guy. And, of course, Jim McMahon was our quarterback who was really crazy.
Yeah, he was nuts.
Still is. I can't say was. He still is crazy. Jim is crazy. I see him on the golf
course. Jim's a man.
He's crazy. He was good, though. But you know what? Jim was right for our team at that time.
Yeah, he was perfect.
We had Dicka, who was crazy, and McMahon, who was crazy. So they both were like butt heads, but they were good for each other.
Well, what the guy you had was from Browns,
Otis Wilson?
Wilson, yeah.
Otis was amazing.
Yeah, he's from my neighborhood,
Browns of Brooklyn. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Otis. I still stay in touch with Otis. Otis was great,
that's awesome.
I mean, we had three of the greatest linebackers when you think about it. You had Otis Wilson, Mike Singletary, and Wilbur Marshall. Those guys, I mean, I would take those guys over anybody. Those guys were amazing.
Best defense in the history of the league.
I think arguably one of the best defenses in the history of the league because they could do so much. That 46 defense just put so much pressure on guys. I mean, those guys, they worked hard. We train after practice. We have a hard practice. We stay after another 20, 30 minutes going through drills and running and doing extra things. So we really were dedicated to winning.
I want to talk to you about the Bears. Because the Chicago fans, they're some of the best fans in the world.
You were on 85, huh?
Pardon, 85 Bears were great.
And the funny thing is about the Bears is when I came there, they had a good year. I think they made it to the playoffs, but they had just released Urlacher, so there was a lot of tension. But it's still like, no matter how the Bears do, it's like last year was the 85 Bears.
Right.
And this year we're going back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, until it happens again, I think the 85 Bears will be revered because think about it, guys.
Totally, man.
The city hadn't won a championship in almost 60 years.
Yeah.
Since 1960 or whatever.
Yes.
So the 85 Bears came, and Chicago was always known as the second city, you know, and people thought, oh, well, there's New York, there's LA.
Right.
Oh, there's Dallas. Oh, Chicago somewhere. But so we sort of embodied what championships were made of, and we brought the interest of the entire world.
Yeah.
I mean, we did the Super Bowl Shuffle, which is a video.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday.
Right,
watched it yesterday.
Yeah, and I helped produce and direct that and write that. And
hell
so
yeah,
we became like the folk hero around the world.
Yeah.
So people, the interest of the NFL grew, I think, by 30-40% that year. And so we also helped save football that year because we brought life back into the league. It was
you
amazing.
Got maybe you saw the refrigerator made a touchdown.
Oh yeah,
the fridge.
Yeah, he was amazing.
How's he doing?
He had a heart attack or something.
Yeah, I think he had a stroke.
I thought he was sick.
Yeah, he was down to like 190 or 200 pounds, but now he's back up at 300. So, but he has his challenges. But think about it, Fridge was 370 pounds.
God.
We called him Biscuit because we say he was Biscuit away from 400. Fridge could stand underneath a goalpost and jump and dunk the ball.
Freak athlete.
Yeah. 6'1", 6'2", 360 pounds.
Freak athlete.
Think about it.
Explosive.
Explosive. I mean, his thighs are like this big.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally,
yeah, so he ran for a touchdown. He tried to throw for a touchdown.
Tackle.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
I mean,
caught a touchdown. But no, he was good. He was really good. Good tackle. We had
a good team.
Yeah, I've done a lot in my life. I mean, I made 2 Olympic teams. I made the Summer Olympics and the Winter Olympics.
And you were on the team that boycotted the 80
Olympics.
Olympics.
1980?
Yep, 1980.
God, how old was you in 1980, man?
Yeah.
I was like 10.
Seriously, man, you were 14.
Like 19?
16 in 1980, man?
I was 19 in 1980.
Oh, you serious?
Wow.
Yeah, man. I was Carl Lewis, myself, Ronaldo Nehemiah, Edwin Moses.
Moses
was amazing.
He's the coolest guy.
Oh, he's cool.
He's so smooth. He's like one of those Zen guys.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, he's on a smooth guy. You see him on a word.
Mike, he was undefeated for like 120 races, which
that's
is almost
crazy.
Unheard of.
That's
so,
like them old time races.
In the 400 meter hurdles, which is a crazy technical event. But Mike, he was a...
The only thing he was doing was weed, right?
Right.
Be honest. Like, he's
weed.
Too mellow not to smoke weed. I don't, but he's too cool not to smoke weed.
He was
he's
cool.
He's too fucking cool.
He is really cool.
He got edge because he's too fucking cool,
he's
man.
Really cool.
He's hiding.
He's so cool, he's edgy.
He's so cool, he's edgy. He's edgy cool.
Cool. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
But he was amazing. So we all made that team together, man. We went to, you know, we had an alternate game, which has an asterisk. I won a gold medal in that game, which was an asterisk, but we had actually more people, more countries participate than the actual Olympic Games in Moscow in 80. We boycotted because the Russians were in Afghanistan. So President Carter thought we shouldn't go, which we all thought we should go and beat them in their own home field.
Yeah, exactly.
But the bad thing about it is that the winter Olympic team in 1980 went to the Olympics.
Yeah.
The summer, we didn't.
The hockey guys.
Yeah, the hockey guys. They won. But so they didn't let us go, which was really sad. But we all were cocky. We were 19.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, it doesn't matter. We'll go again in the next one. But it doesn't happen like that, Mike. You know, I mean, you get one shot in life sometimes.
You
don't give me the chances.
That's what I would tell young kids now. Take advantage of your moment.
Exactly.
This won't last for long.
It won't last forever.
You know,
you
take advantage of your moment. You have to go somewhere else and prepare for your next journey.
Yeah.
You have to prepare for the next journey.
It's about
what I didn't understand in boxing. I just, I'm a very lucky guy, and I, you know, man, grateful for God or the Creator, whoever. I never had a plan B to get out of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about getting out of it. You know, I was enjoying
this.
Throwing this to the way. I thought this was gonna last forever. And people said, not gonna last forever. Man, fuck you. I'm Tyson. I'm a fucking God. It's gonna last forever. You crazy? This and that, and this and that. And then you say, fuck, this shit
it's
didn't
here.
Last forever. Right. And when it's gone, it's fucking gone. Everything else is fucking like osmosis. What happened to that? This and that. It's just all gold.
Right. Yeah.
It all fucking goes.
It's and, time
and
flies.
And besides
man.
That, you're going to have some extra fucking lawsuits on you. You're going to have some fucking tax bullshit you got to deal
you're
with.
Gonna
you're
going to
be
hole.
Fucked up. Yeah, you're
going to be
ex-wives. Oh, no, Willie, that remind me. Ex-wives. Kids
exactly.
Come out of nowhere. Who the fuck is that?
Looks just like me, though.
Yeah, who the fuck are you? You got to start a relationship late with this kid
and
shit.
It's a life, though. It's part of life, man.
Yeah.
It's what makes us who we are, you know. It's one of those things that, you know, it's a ride, you know. It's a roller coaster. You know, you got ups and you got downs. And it's just, you got to ride it. And when you're going down, you got to ride
and
it.
You know what I realized? That life is about giving it your hardest kick as long as you're living.
Exactly.
Keep fighting hard for what you want in life. And just keep fighting hard and don't give up.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's so true.
It's your last breath. It's your last breath. Don't give up. Keep fighting.
Exactly.
I see a lot of my friends, they just gave up. Died of broken hearts or killed themselves, actually physically killed themselves for loneliness, actually.
Yeah.
Thinks it's all over because they don't have no fucking money.
Right.
They think it's over. These are great people, but they think it's nothing if they don't have no fucking money.
Because the society thinks that, you know, that's a measurement. Man. Society's wealth is here. You got to be a certain place. But you don't. It's all in here. It's all in here. You know, it's all in the heart.
You know what a lot of us don't understand? It took me a while. That we love you. We glad that you made money with a champion. But we loved you before you even had money and stuff. We don't even think, because we have a fucking low self-esteem idea of ourselves. You think nobody wants to be with us unless you have money to have something.
You're absolutely
they ain't love you anyway, but you don't love yourself to realize that. Right. You don't see the good quality in you, so they loved you anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I try to tell people, Michael, is that every morning and every night, I look in the mirror. I brush my teeth or whatever, but I want to be able to like that person.
Oh, that's deep.
You like that guy because of the things that you've done and the things that you're doing and the things that you know and think. So if you do that, then it's all.
That's what I work on now. Work on liking that guy.
Liking that guy in the mirror. Because you are a very special individual, a human being. No one's like you. No one's like me. No one's like you. We're all special in our own way. So we have to understand and give what we can. It's all about what's that dash in between you're born and die.
Yes, that dash.
What did you do in between? What's your dash? What does your dash say?
The dash is a big small, but it's a big dash.
And you have a big dash, Michael. You know, you've inspired so many people by what you've done, you know, in the place that you come from. You come from nothing, and then you build this thing. And it's like, it's all gut, but we can see it. It's all grit and gut and heart and just, you know, savages and just do your thing because that's what you have to do. And we realize that. And then we see the sensitive side of the pigeon and that thing. You know, it's like, wow, this guy is a beast in the ring, but yet he loves pigeons because it's like a bird. It's like, it's so indicative of life because we're birds, we want to fly. But yet we want to be tough too. We want to do tough things. But the pigeons, man, that was like, wow, that's really, really deep. So I really appreciate it. I learned a lot about you through that, not even talking to you about it, but understood what it was, you know?
I don't know. I come from not being nowhere.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're somewhere and don't know how to really what the fuck to do when you get there.
Right,
what am I going to do here?
Right, exactly.
Do I really deserve this? Do I own this stuff?
That's your self-deserve, right? Because if you'd have been confident in yourself, like, man, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is it. No problem.
That's what I was saying. Deserve this shit. Stop up to me, give me sex, these beautiful women. They don't even know me. They don't know I'm a pig. I got some diseases. We love
you.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. It was just about being with Mike.
Sick.
Absolutely. It is. It's interesting, right? It's an interesting world. But the thing I like to say also, Mike, is that, you know, time is our most valuable asset. We can never get it back. The time that we waste, whatever.
Yeah.
You can't never get it back. So we have to be very conscious of our time, and that's why I appreciate your time that you're going to spend with me, and my time was worth coming here because I respect you that much.
And I'm so grateful that you came here. And life is about our journey.
Absolutely.
And who we meet in our journey. Because our journey will be over shortly.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's just I'm really happy in my journey and the people I've met in my journey.
Right. Well, I just want to let you know, man, if you need me for anything, bro, I'm going to give you guys my information.
I appreciate that,
if you need me for anything, whether it be whatever, you can call me. I'm always going to be there.
Hell yeah,
thank you very much.
Sure. Let's talk about your stories with Hugh. Hef.
Uh-oh.
My stories with Hugh?
Yeah.
Which Hugh?
Parties at the Playboy Mansion, dude.
Let's say this. I had fun at the Playboy Mansion. I mean, I was there. I started going when I was in college. I had to make the Playboy All-American team.
Oh, sweet.
So I started going in college before I got drafted in 83. So I was at the Playboy Mansion from 79 through maybe a couple years ago. So I've seen everything at the Playboy Mansion. Seen everything, sort of done everything. So it was really, it's a really amazing place. Oh, Grotto's, the Grotto was great.
I came there late. I was always high and fell asleep. I was hoping I wasn't farting while I was sleeping. I passed out. Everybody's watching television and I'm passing out and I'm hoping I wasn't farting. And I'm sleeping. Nobody waked me up.
Was always wide awake and understood what was happening. So it was good. But it was a great place. I mean, it's a male's paradise, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a place where I think you sort of leave your egos at the door and just go in from a fantasy standpoint and just enjoy it and not get caught up in the to who's not there, who's there, whatever, and just enjoy yourself by being there. It was great. But he was a great guy.
Wasn't he?
Sounds cool.
Looked at it from this perspective. He didn't know me well. He probably knew my name, but he didn't know me well. But he always showed me respect.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Whole family always showed me respect. Brought me in.
Absolutely.
Brought food to me. Gave me food. You know what I mean? Asked me where to sit.
Took care of you.
He's an awesome guy.
That's awesome.
And exactly. Like he knew me all this.
Exactly.
Life.
The parties. Yeah. I mean, I went to like 4th of July parties. I would go on movie night and movies with them and, you know, some of the other stuff. Dope like Midsummer Night Dream.
Yeah, I went to movies.
Yeah, the movie nights.
What movies?
I don't remember the movie. The movie was not important.
Yeah,
it was just everything around.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like we were all together.
All right, exactly. Absolutely. It was cool. And it's at the Playboy match in Beverly Hills. I mean, come on, guys. It's Playboy match.
They had some nice
ladies.
Really nice.
That's an understatement. Oh, yeah. Yeah, really beautiful ladies there. They were all great. And they loved him, you know, because he was somewhat of the American dream, you know. He was awesome. And he treated them nicely. I mean, you know, helped them out in their careers and just, you know, their rent. I mean, it's all that stuff. It's just part of it.
No, that's what I did when I had all that fucking money. I was helping girls out. You need a car.
I know. Mike, I heard about that.
Fuck. That's what I was. I don't blame her.
Very generous. Very charitable.
Oh, man. Yeah. Fuck, everybody does that, right? Like, hey, take a car.
He want a car. Your
house?
The house?
Everybody does that.
You're poor. You're wealthy. What the fuck?
Why not share the wealth, right?
Willie, do you use any CBD?
I don't yet.
Yeah.
But I got some of the cream that I'm going to try.
Yeah, man.
So I'm going to try that. And I've never drank, smoked, or done drugs in my life.
Yeah.
What is that like?
Yeah, what is that
I'm always a designated driver, for sure.
Yeah.
Whenever I go with my girlfriends and friends, they always go, okay, you're driving. Okay, great, no problem. And my friends, so it's no problem. But when I started this athletic thing, when I was very young, I saw people drink and smoke, and they just abused it. And so I was like, oh, that's crazy. Then I said, okay, I'm an athlete. I want to run as fast as I can, be the best athlete I can. If I drink, it's not really going to help me. If I smoke, it's not going to help me because it's going to clog my lungs. I won't be fast. So I'm just not going to do it. So I decided very early not to do it. And I'll tell you a story, which will be in my documentary, is that when I was probably in high school, junior high school, I had a car. So we would go to practice, track practice, and all the guys would be four guys. I let the guy drive, and I sat in the back. The guy lit up a joint or a cigarette, and I rolled down the window and stuck my head out and go, what are you doing? I go, well, I don't want to smoke.
You didn't even want to inhale.
No, they started laughing. I started laughing too and said, oh my gosh, you're country, you're square. And I go, you're right. So I laughed at myself because it was funny, but it was okay. And I said, guys, it's okay. It's just that I think from a mental standpoint, I think it's not going to help me be the person that I want to be from an athlete standpoint.
I have a 16-year-old son that just totally don't believe in none of that stuff. Amen. I have a 20-year-old that's totally right. That loves it. He likes the party.
Yep. That's
so
interesting.
Year old
yeah, exactly.
The one yeah, that
I mean,
believe
but you know,
it.
But the thing about it is that I never talk bad about anybody that does it. I encourage whatever. I mean, it's, everything in moderation is okay. Everything's in moderation is okay. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of my friends drink. A lot of my friends smoke. Whatever. I just okay, cool.
The
I give it to you. I have it in my house. No problem.
Yeah, yeah. No, the great thing about CBD, though,
I know
is that you know psychoactivity.
I know. I believe I've been researching it.
Did you have any concussions when you played?
I probably had several, but back then it's smelling salts and go back to the game. Can you see one finger? Yeah, okay, go back
to
the game.
You guys, what are your – do you have any benefits through the league now?
No.
Yeah, you don't, right?
Once you retire, I think you get 2 years and then all your benefits are basically over. I mean, when I say benefits – your health benefits is the main
thing. Right.
Wow. Because guys have to pay for insurance and it's so expensive.
God.
But, man, it's something should be done about it and we're trying to do something about it. But, you know, it's a long journey because it's such a system. And I think, you know, because I do work with the insurance company, we can do it. Probably it's going to cost us $15 to $20 million, which would probably be $1 million per team per year to get all this. Probably it's probably 20,000 guys, 15,000 to 20,000 guys that are ex-NFL players that need insurance.
Yes.
So I'm working on a system to try to do that, but it's such a machine.
I'd love to talk with you about that.
Not terrible, but they're huge.
Guys need to have lifetime health insurance.
Well, and the thing about it, Mike, is this. The young guys, they don't really care because they're in it. They're doing it. They're getting nothing done. They don't realize they're going to be where we are in 10, 12 years.
Listen, a guy 52 when I was 20, that was an old motherfucker. Oh, what are you talking about? Absolutely. Don't say shit, all right? You're too
what the
antiquated.
Fuck do you know about me?
I thought my mom and dad was old in their 30s, and I was like, at 15, 16, I was like, man, you guys are old.
Yeah.
Think about it, man.
Oh, my
50 years old is like ancient.
Yeah.
Well, you know the NBA guys have lifetime health insurance.
Oh, I know they do, believe me. I know Congress has lifetime insurance, too.
Dude,
and they get lifetime payments.
We got to get it.
I mean, we have to. It's a $14 billion industry.
Yeah,
this year, last year, they made $14 billion and 2 years ago.
No doubt.
And growing.
That's right.
So, I mean, I think out of that $14 billion, which we helped create, I think we should be eligible to be able to at least have health insurance.
Absolutely.
That's because our pension is really not that great either.
No.
Think about it. I played 12 seasons in the National Football League. If I retire and get my pension at 55, I make $3,400 a month. $3,400 a month in California gets you buckets.
In L.A.?
I mean, make it your food, make it pay for your utilities. It won't pay for rent, won't pay anything.
But you're still homeless.
You know, exactly.
You're not going to have a nice
apartment. Exactly. No,
it's
not.
It's not going to be bigger than this.
Right. It's at the poverty level. So it's like, you know, but if you wait to 65, I'll get over $8,000. But this is the key here, guys. Most of the guys in the National Football League, they die around 54 to 55 years of age. So they're not expecting you to reach 65 to get the higher amount. And that's why they do it.
Yeah,
it's all a plan. They understand that if you wait, then you're probably not going to get there. Very few guys are going to get there. So I'm going to try to beat them and make sure I get there.
Yeah.
So that's why I stay in shape and do my thing and everything else. So,
got to, man.
Oh yeah.
Listen, I must have health insurance, right? Because I just had an operation and it cost like $300,000.
Yeah, you got to have health insurance.
Yeah,
$300,000.
I used to pay out of my pocket.
Listen. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I had no idea. Fucking surgery cost a couple hundred thousand.
Oh yeah, easy.
What the fuck?
You got $50,000 just by going in the ER.
Listen, dang, I was never aware of that because there was always place insurance. You know, you fight the.
Oh yeah, they insure the fight.
Insurance pay for you and stuff.
Yeah.
I started coming out my pocket. I said, what?
Exactly.
I stopped going to the doctor.
Exactly.
Even if I'm sick, I'm not going to the doctor. I have to pay $500,000 for this.
Yeah.
To check out my cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's not right.
Oh, yeah, it's not right.
Crazy.
And if you're feeling bad, you go to the emergency room, you're looking at, it could be several thousand dollars easily.
That's why people don't see doctors.
Right, we have insurance through Tyson Ranch as well, so we should talk to you about that.
Okay, great. For sure. That's what I do.
I didn't realize the reason I saw my check. I mean, the receipt that I had to get to pay the bill for my operation is $380,000. $380,000?
Yeah.
I'm thinking like $38,000.
Yeah.
$380,000 for an operation?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
They get you. They charge you for everything.
They'll charge you whatever they want.
They charge you for everything, man. I'm telling you.
That is just not fair.
If you look at the breakdown, it's probably this long.
That's on you.
A scaffold, that's on you. Yeah. You got to pay for it. Everything. Yeah. It's crazy.
Somebody had a cup of water to drink. It's on
you.
$10.
Listen, what do you do if you don't have no money, if you're not fortunate to do this stuff?
You're fucked, dude.
You got to fight, man. You got to scrap. You got to do what you can do, man. It's tough.
My dad can't afford health insurance.
It's tough. It is tough. It's tough out there. So that's why I go back to the adage, man. We have to.
That's it. I used to have to pay that shit. It's like everybody used to come out of my pocket for that stuff.
Absolutely.
Insanity.
Then it becomes real.
Yeah, it becomes very real.
Because you know about it, so you've experienced it.
Very real.
Neither of my parents, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very
it's fucked.
I know.
Willie, so what do you do these days, man?
So
you got this documentary.
Got the documentary I'm doing. That's crazy. It's going to take me a couple years to shoot it. I'm doing financial planning through life insurance annuities and, doing some stocks and bonds. And we have a bonding company in Vegas. We do surety bonds for companies when they're building buildings to guarantee it. And I work out a lot. I go to track, UCLA, the gym. I go to gym, Gold's Gym, work out. I still compete in masters. I have the masters world record for my age group
all the way down. Dude.
I've broken 13 world records in a span of 35 years.
Hell yeah, Willie.
Yeah, so I love what I do. I love running, love doing all those type of things. And I love my kids. I have two kids. My son's an artist. My kid's 27, and my son's 27. My daughter's 31. My daughter just got married last year. My son did a painting of you, and he sold it like right away. It's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. He just did a big one, a Spike Lee, which I'm going to show you.
Oh, that's sick.
It's 8 feet by 8 feet. It's amazing. It's huge.
Dope.
Huge. So, I mean, he wanted to do something else of you.
See you on Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, he's on Instagram. It's Gabe Gault.
Gabe Gault.
Yeah, so if you look at it, and I'm going to show it to you, Mike, which is it's amazing. So
look at that.
That's a picture you did of Spike Lee.
Oh, wow. Brooklyn.
Show him because it's a big.
That's dope, dude.
See how big he is. Yeah.
Look at that.
You can see how big he is.
That's dope as hell.
Yeah, that's off the hook.
Yeah, he's 6 feet.
I want to see the one he did of Mike.
Yeah, I got to see that. Find that one.
I wouldn't know the first thing to do about painting. What's the first stroke? What do you do? How do you do?
We got to get Gabe on the pod.
No, absolutely.
How do you do that? What's the first thing you think of? The first stroke. What am I doing? The first stroke is what?
Right. The first stroke is you get, it's imagination. Okay. You imagine what you want.
You concept that. I can't understand that. I know.
Look. I have a little bit of artistic drawing abilities, but nothing like him. So first of all, you come up with the image, and then you got to draw the image, and then you paint the image, or you paint the image and you draw the image. So it's just it's.
I love
one of those
his
things.
Work, man. Yeah, it's dope
you.
As hell.
Thank you. He's really cool. He's done a lot of good stuff.
An artist is different than anybody. They have a fucking.
Oh yeah.
Insight.
They think differently.
Yeah, they have to. Cause how do you do that? How do you put something in the mirror and they got to put
in
that
in your mind?
Yeah, exactly.
You project it.
Right. Absolutely. Too deep. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. How often are you here, Mike? But you live here, though, right?
Well, I stay in Newport Beach.
Right, exactly.
Now,
so often, always here.
Yeah.
Okay. And in Vegas.
Not in Vegas. Yeah. Vegas is history. Okay. Now. Awesome. Vegas is gone.
Okay.
Did you bring the pigeons here, Mike?
No, in Vegas.
Oh, really?
We got. We still live in a house, but we're still looking for another house.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, one of the things, guys, I want to tell you about the Winter Olympics, and I was in the 1988
Lake
Winter
Placid.
Olympics in Calgary. I was there with the Jamaicans.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Remember the movie Jamaican Bossa?
Yes, of course.
Did they smoke?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Fuck, why you never smoke with us? Did they offer you?
You want some ganja mug?
Come on.
Ganja mug.
You didn't try it.
Exactly. I didn't try it. But those guys came to Calgary.
Wasn't that beautiful, though?
It was great. It was beautiful.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it was so awesome.
It was great. They came with no winter clothes, so we started giving them, like, winter stuff to race in and to wear, and their bobsled was just terrible, so they had to get a new bobsled, and, of course, they weren't very good, but it was just the image and the excitement of them being there, and, of course, they made a movie about it, and
yeah,
those guys
man.
Were really cool. Those guys were great.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was great.
Out of all the guys you competed with and played with, and all the athletes,
right.
from the Olympics, from football, who do you keep in touch with the most?
I stay in touch with my football guys, you know, like Otis and Richard Dent and Jim McMahon.
Jim is big into cannabis.
Oh, I know Jim is big. Absolutely. Yeah. Marcus Allen's one of my best friends. Yeah. Stay in touch with him. Tim Brown, Jerry Rice, Eric Dickerson. All those guys are my buddies. You know, I hang out with those guys. Dr. J, I see him a lot and hang out with him. Dr. J is so cool, man. Dr. J is amazing. And, I mean, I hang out with a lot of these guys, man. They're really amazing guys, and I see them all the time on the golf course because we have golf tournaments, a lot of
that's
the celebrity
awesome.
Golf tournaments, so yeah. I see them a lot there, which is good. I mean, because you get a chance
to
go around the country, they pay for everything, and you play golf, and you get a chance to play golf with your buddies.
That's great. Hell yeah,
yeah
dude.
Absolutely. You don't play golf, Mike?
Never in my life. I hit the ball. Listen, what happened one day? One day I'm getting ready to hit the ball, and I swing, and it leaves my hand.
Oh, shit.
And it's getting ready to hit this car, and I'm like, I have to pay for this damn car. Thank God I didn't hit the car.
But the thing about golf, Mike, is this. Everybody started there. Everybody started the same place.
No matter what.
Everybody started, couldn't hit the ball. No matter what, you was this big.
And that ball's hard to hit.
It's hard to hit. It's this big, hard to hit. But it's a great sport because it's a great business sport because you have the attention of someone for 3 or 4 hours that you can make deals. You can learn a lot about someone. If they cheat,
I just walk, though. They're playing, I'm walking and talking.
Exactly. And you can putt?
Deal. No, I don't play. I just walk.
And you can putt, though. But you can putt, too, though, which is good. So, especially in the celebrity golf tournaments, because you play scramble and it doesn't really matter. You got five guys hit the ball, it doesn't matter. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, it's really good. But I play a lot of golf. I love golf.
That's awesome. What's your handicap?
I'm probably about a 10 to 12, depending on how much I play.
Good, man.
You'd be surprised how many people cheat in golf.
Well, you tell a lot about cheating.
No, really. A lot of people in golf cheat. That freaked me out. Why are they cheating?
Yeah.
How the fuck? What the fuck are they cheating for?
Yeah. Because they want their score.
But how do you cheat? The fucking everybody's watching you. How the fuck are you going to cheat? You feel me, though, Evan?
I know.
That's what I didn't understand about golf. How are you cheating? Everybody's watching you. You're cheating in front of everybody.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Falling way over there.
I'll just drop one here. Exactly. Wow. Right. Oh, I got it in four, actually.
Yeah.
These are grown men. I know, it's crazy.
That's a trip.
It's a trip because they want their handicap to be lower.
Yeah.
Instead of working, they want to just don't worry.
Yeah.
That's a give me. And the putts from here to the wall, that's a give me.
That's not a give me.
No, that's like
you wouldn't hit the 4 foot putt.
That's a two putter.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's funny. But it's a great sport, though.
Thank
you. Oh, awesome.
Do you miss all those times you had? You said, boy, I wish I had more time. Do you say,
of course,
I could do it again?
Of course. Well, also, I think, Mike, you know, you miss the camaraderie with the guys and the people and the fans. You miss that. I mean, especially in a team sport like football, like track is an individual sport, and like boxing is an individual sport. But you have that camaraderie with the team, and you're there, you're training in training camp, and then when you get for the fight, you're all together. It's all for one thing. It's so you go out and win, do your best. But I miss that. I miss the camaraderie with the guys on the bus trips and going in town and going to movies and going to different cities and coming out and playing the game and have that genuine like of the next guy you're playing with, and that brotherhood, that brothership, and to understand that we're all fighting for one thing, that's to win a Super Bowl. And we were able to do that 1 year, and it was so valuable.
Powerful, man.
Oh, yeah, so powerful.
Well, that's how it was for boxers and amateurs. We all loved it. We rooted for each other. We fought somebody else. But once we became professional, it came about money.
Oh, yeah.
Bitter enemies.
It's like different. Yeah. You have your guys. I mean, like someone is a different division, then it's okay. It's like, okay, cool. But if someone in your division is like, okay, you got to, because you got mad to fight him one day. It's like, forget that, man, because I don't want to feel nothing about you. I just want to go and knock you out. Yeah. That was the thing. So, yeah.
That's real talk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah.
That's crazy,
man. That's sports, man. Sports is, look, if I was a coach somewhere or parents, I would require my kids to do sports. Sports teach you so much about life.
Well, I mean, character.
It builds character, man. It builds character. It builds, you know, camaraderie. It teaches you how to work with a team. I mean, to be able to be on a team and to be able to work together is what life is all about. You know?
Overcome your fears.
Overcome your fears of being not good enough, or, you know, even if you're not as good as that guy, you can work toward that. I mean, sports gives you an opportunity to work to be the best that you can be. I mean, look, I'll never be a boxer like you, the boxer that you were, but I can work to be the best of my ability. And that's what sports is all about. It's about trying to do your best.
It's about your psychological opinion about yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, because there's guys out there that talk, and you know what I mean? And I'm this and I'm that and this and that and I'm this and I'm the best, and they don't have nothing. And there's guys that have everything and they don't think much of themselves.
Exactly. Absolutely.
They don't think much of themselves. Right. They don't have a good self-esteem, but they do. They got it all.
They got it all, right. Absolutely. And they just don't understand it. It's very interesting.
It's interesting how different guys are like that.
Right. You're right. Yeah. Because of the mind. And mind is crazy. Mind can play tricks on you.
Oh,
you
meditate, it's not your friend. Your mind is not your friend.
I don't meditate. I think clearly. I don't meditate. Okay. I just think clearly.
Well,
all the
you've
time.
Never.
I've never, you know, I look, this is what I do. In any situation, I don't rush to judge anything. I take a beat. You know, I think about how it's going to affect me, how it's going to affect my kids, my family, the person around me, and me in the future. And then I make a decision. So I try to never rush and make any decisions. So when you think like that, because we get, you know, sometimes we get in a situation where we're like upset and you've got to make a decision. But go, okay, let me take a beat. 1, 2, 3. Let me think about what I'm doing. And then you do it. Then you react. So if you do that, then you make much better decisions. Because it's all about making a decision. We make a decision either go to the left or go to the right. And if you're in a situation where you're upset, and the left is making you upset, you're going to go there. As opposed to if you sit and think and go, wait a minute, that's danger over there. Let me just go this way. Then you will make that decision. And that's what I try to teach my kids and people I talk to. I go, look, when you're in a crowded situation or in a situation where you're angry, don't make a decision. Think about it first. Think about how it's going to affect you, how it's going to affect your family, your surrounding, the person you're affecting, and you in the future. And then you make a decision. Then you'll make a much better decision. And that's why that's what I try to do. I try to do that every day in my life, and it's just a part of who I am, you know.
So you've programmed yourself. Programmed
myself to do that.
Yeah.
Programmed myself to do that. So
many people, you know, in this day and age, they don't have any like clue about how to do that, though.
They don't because they've never done it.
Right.
Never heard of it.
I had to be beaten into submission.
Oh yeah.
I didn't want to do it. I had to be beaten into submission. Right. Because my main objective was destroying myself.
Right.
Not
even conscious of it. Because that's just the way because you didn't know anything else. That's what you knew. That's what you
came from. I was dying to live. Yeah. That's what I was dying to live.
Right. Yeah. I was very fortunate, Mike, that, you know, when I look at my situation, I had a great mother and a father. I still have a great father. My mother passed away a couple years ago. But I had a great mother and father who was always there for me. They let me make decisions early in my life, like to go to college. They go, look, we're not going to tell you where to go to college. You go where you think you should go, and then if you don't like it, then you blame yourself. You can't blame me. Which I thought was very smart for me. And so they were always there. They're still always there. They taught me right from wrong. My mother taught me how to cook. I can cook anything in the kitchen. So I don't really need anything. I can go and do everything myself. So my dad has a sixth grade education. He knows how to tear an engine out of a car and put it back together. He knows all general plumbing, electrician, carpentry. He did all that. So he taught me all that stuff. So little stuff around my house, I can do all that. I can do electrician. I can do little plumbing. I can do, you know, carpentry. I can do all that stuff. So
mechanic?
Because my dad, of course, a little. Yeah. Now, I don't mess with mechanic because cars these days are crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything else I can do. I mean, when stuff break around the house, because when you got a house, Mike, you know, there's always something to do.
Constantly.
Always
the
something
to do. Water fucked up. The toilet. A fucking leak in the kitchen.
Exactly.
You get one thing fixed, something else gets
It's always something.
Up.
So I can do those little general things, you know, because I'll call a guy maintenance. Well, I can be there in 2 weeks. Well, I need you now. So I just go and do it. Exactly. So I go and do it. So I was very fortunate to have those type
of things. My wife would go on internet and find YouTube and say, how do you fix a leak? Right. How do you fix this plumbing? Yep. Find out
how to do it. My wife does that too.
Yeah.
And she's like, look, idiot, this is how you do it. And I'm like,
so I just go and
I
do
don't
it.
Need that.
I just go and do it now. Yeah. So it's cool. So, yeah, it's really cool.
No, but it's good to learn. It's interesting. I'm only 31, but I've owned my home for, 4 years now. It's interesting. I'm like becoming an adult.
Life has changed much. You know, before it was always the man had to work and the woman had to stay home. Now it's about a family network. We have to work together.
Yeah. You're right. Work
you
together.
Know, we have to.
Work together. You got to work together. Yeah. It's crazy.
Because that didn't work. The mother staying at home and the father just working. That didn't work. That didn't come successful for the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. Didn't work.
Yeah. And it's a different day. It's crazy.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Especially in California, man.
We have to be we have to be in each other's presence as much as possible.
Yeah.
You're right.
You know, communicate.
Communication.
Communication.
That's a key.
That's another thing
ask them what you want. Absolutely.
Stay
ask them what you want.
Yeah.
You got to ask them what you want. You got to tell them what you want. Tell them what you're going to do so we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
That's what everything is about, being on the same page.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Man. Willie, thanks for coming
in,
brother.
It's my pleasure. This is great. I thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, appreciate the opportunity.
Any grandkids?
Not yet. My daughter said a couple more years. So, cool. Yeah. So sweet, I'm looking forward to that at some point.
That'll be great. Yeah, for sure. You'll be a fucking badass grandpa.
Oh, my kids, man. Oh, yeah, for sure. I ran my kids to death. I used to run them all the time.
Yeah.
They go, Dad, that's enough. That's enough. Let's keep running.
Yeah.
Tired out.
Hey, man, that's a great thing to instill in your kid.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, exercise and fitness and taking care of your body.
Right. But, Mike, I'm going to get my son to do another painting of him. I want to give it to you.
I would appreciate that.
That
would
be so
what
awesome.
I want to do is that I want you to find the very best picture of you that you want, something that you want. So I want this painting of me.
Cool.
And that's what we're going to do, okay?
I'll dig it.
I'll do
That'd
it, okay?
That'd be dope as hell.
And we're going to give it to you. You tell us what size you want, and we'll make it that size.
I'll probably get a family painting.
Okay, whatever you want, man, okay?
Be dope as hell.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure, brother.
Thanks, Willie.
My pleasure, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, brother.
I appreciate it. I'm going to quick selfie Michael here with you.
What year were you born, Willie?
I was born in 1960.
Let me just wrap this.
You age my brother.
Oh, yeah.
Great episode, Mike.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Excellent episode, everybody. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe on YouTube. Tell your friends. Tell your family. We love you guys. Until next time, we're out of here.
Out of here. Peace.